And now we move on to our roundtable and a discussion of the CBC and a post-Rumsfeld military. Joining us today from our headquarters in Washington, Yvonne Bino, author of the book Stand and Deliver, Political Activism, Leadership, and Hip-Hop Culture, along with Joe Davidson, an editor at the Washington Post at our New York Bureau, plus Walter Fields, CEO and publisher of the NorthStarNetwork.com, also in New York. So welcome, everyone, and I want to get some reaction to Mel Watt. One question I really have is, how secure can the CBC be, if that's a tongue twister right there, if it is only of one party? Walter, what do you think?
Well, I think in a democratically controlled House of Representatives, they can have a major impact. And I think, you know, Mel Watt was right in terms of the history of the CBC. You know, Bill Clay once coined it. He said, no permanent friends, no permanent interests. I think the problem of the Republican Party is what Mel Watt described. They're going to have to find ways. This is a defining moment for the Republican Party and Democratic Party. But the CBC, under a democratically controlled House, could play a major role because those 43 votes are a huge voting block. Now, that doesn't mean that they're a monolithic body because they represent different interests, even though they are all black members of Congress. But certainly, they have more of an opportunity here with some of the senior members because of seniority in the House, moving up to chairmanships, to certainly have a louder voice in a Democratic caucus in the House.
Joe, how important is it to really get black faces in these leadership positions in the House?
Well, I think it's very important. I think that John Conyers and Charlie Rangel, for example, becoming chairs of two of the most powerful committees in the House, Ways and Means for Charlie Rangel and Judiciary for Conyers, will be in a position to play a very strong role in shaping policies that come out of the Congress, and policies that in some ways might confront or challenge the President and the White House. I think you'll certainly see that coming out of Judiciary, with certain things affecting the civil liberties and civil rights of Americans, as well as non-Americans who live in this country. And certainly during the past few years, the White House has pushed and the Republican-dominated Congress has granted widespread authority to the president, probably unprecedented authority to the president in the area of civil liberties as it relates to detentions and other things related to the war on terror. Clearly, when it comes to Ways and Means, the Ways and Means Committee is the committee that that initiates taxes, the taxing policy in the House. And certainly the Republicans have a somewhat different view on taxing than most Democrats do. So that's another area where Charlie Rangel can be very influential in shaping policy.
Yvonne, your book, Stand and Deliver, really talks about black politics or hip-hop generation politics from a younger perspective. Regardless of the shift in power, regardless of the CBC's ascent in terms of likely committee chairs, is there enough connection between black politicians and people who are more on a grassroots level? And if not, what needs to happen to make that happen?
Well, I think that's an interesting question. I think that, unfortunately, there is not. I think that a lot of these CBC members have been in power for decades and decades. And if you go into communities, the complaint is that you don't see them until election time. When elections do come, there's this whole trotting out of stand, let's be united behind, you know, the Democrats. And it's always this whole issue about, you know, the bad guys, the Republicans. Whether or not you believe in what the GOP stands for doesn't necessarily mean that you buy into everything that the Democrats are standing for or that they're actually doing anything. And a lot of these communities that are led by and have been led for a long time by black politicians, there is no progress. It's the same set of conditions that you've seen for decades now. So I think, unfortunately for the CBC, younger people are less interested in this whole idea of backing a candidate based on whether they're a Democrat or a Republican, and they're not necessarily even that interested sometimes in the race issue. They're interested in what can you do for me? How can my neighborhood be improved? How can my community be improved? How can I get a job? Those type of bread and butter issues. I also have to respectfully disagree with the congressman because Michael Steele didn't lose by that many votes. So black people actually did vote for Michael Steele. There is a contingent of people. He was from Prince George's County. He has been a visible force since he became lieutenant governor. And he did appeal to people. He appealed to social conservatives. And he appealed to people who were, frankly, tired of the Democrats. So I think that certainly you have some extreme GOP candidates that will come out there that no one will vote for. But I think that if they can find some moderate people who sound reasonable, I think they have a chance. And I think that the Democrats need to really understand that and stop laying on past laurels.
But, you know, if you look at the votes that Michael Steele got from places like Prince George's County and Baltimore City, the two most populous black areas in Maryland, he got thumped, as Bush said. The Republicans got thumped. He did, and overall he came in about 10 points behind the victor, who was Ben Cardin. But that includes, but if we're just focusing on black votes, this margin, his margin of defeat was far greater than that.
And for that's what I wanted to add too. I mean, we shouldn't create a mythology around Mike Steele. Mike Steele didn't do that well among the black electorate. I was in Baltimore 4 weeks ago when Mike Steele appeared at my university homecoming at Morgan State, and he was roundly booed by a predominantly black audience. So Mike Steele didn't make the inroads in the black electorate that many people thought he would make. But one point I want to make about sort of this disillusionment with black elected officials, we also need to understand that most of these black Democrats, and I'm no apologist for them because I've criticized them in the past, they have been out of power now for some time. Mm. I mean, the Republican Party since the 1980s have really taken control of this country. Since 1994, they've been in charge of Congress. So we need to remember that. And we also need to remember that voters 26 years younger and younger, they're the Reagan generation. All they have really known and seen is Republican leadership in our federal government. So I think this is going to be an interesting 110th Congress, because now the Democrats are going to have probably the opportunity of a lifetime to redefine their party. And I think that's a critical challenge, because if you look at who was elected, they were mostly moderates and centrist. And we need to figure out what that really means from a Democratic perspective.
But also, too, this is not about a mythology. The bottom line is that we're not just dealing with black voters. You don't need but so many black people to cross over for some of these candidates to win. So certainly, if you want to parse out black people, and also, too, Baltimore and PG County are two different demographics, so people like to lump those together. But the bottom line is you don't need but so many black people to help bring these candidates over the line.
But
that's the issue that you keep talking about. If you can incrementally, election, get that on, get black people to cross over, then you're going to get more of these candidates winning.
Well, before, there's a lot to talk about. And being from Baltimore, the difference between Baltimore and PG County definitely is vast. But I want to move on to the Defense Department, because we just had that conversation with Secretary Togo West. I'm very interested in the fact that African Americans are more likely to be plugged into the war as a key issue than Americans as a whole. And I'm wondering, with the CBC, to tie the two topics together, with the CBC ascending in power, will black elected officials, will black voters, will black constituents have an influence on shaping the war? Joe, I'm going to start with you.
Well, I think that to the extent that Congress has some influence in shaping the war, and to the extent that the Congressional Black Caucus is a significant body within the Congress, certainly within the House, which I think it is, then the answer to that is yes. But it's not as if Mel Watt is suddenly going to become the chief foreign affairs or military advisor to the president. It's not going to be that significant. I think that the significance is in that the American people basically have spoken on the Iraqi war, on the war in Iraq, and that is that that they do not like the way it is going. It is not at all clear which way people think it should go, but they certainly don't like the way it is going now. And I think the dismissal of Rumsfeld is an indication that the president has finally accepted that verdict.
Walter, very good point. You know, the American people have spoken that, hey, we don't like this, but there's not really a lot of alternatives put on the table thus far. Do you think that citizens or perhaps members of the CBC will start proposing alternatives, or is that too dangerous in a world where any alternative can be picked apart, dissected, shot down?
Well, I think it's clear with the replacement of Rumsfeld that the White House understands that they're going to have to come up with an alternative strategy, and they're going to be pressured to do so by Democratic leadership in Congress. But what's real interesting about black voices on the war, you know, prior to the invasion of Iraq, there were black leaders who were speaking out against it, including members of the Congressional Black Caucus. And I go back to some appearances I did on CNN and the number of blacks who emailed me who were absolutely opposed to any notion of invading Iraq. The problem was those voices weren't being heard. You saw very few black members of Congress on any of the Sunday morning talk shows. You heard, saw very few interviews with them during the lead up to the war. So what I'm hoping that now that you have Democrats in control of potentially both houses, that those voices will be given more prominence in the national discussion, because beforehand, they were just shunned and ignored.
Yvonne, who's going to have this say as the war develops, as the leadership of the Defense Department develops?
I don't think a whole lot's going to change. I think that we're seeing a different face here. But if you look, this is another Bush 41 crony. I don't think that substantively we're going to see a great deal of change. I think that the label that has been given to Gates is that he's a pragmatist. Perhaps what we will see is some type of plan, some type of exit strategy to get out. But I frankly would not be surprised if we see a troop buildup in order to get out and do it with some level of dignity. So I think this whole idea that the Republicans who are sitting in Congress are going to roll over just because there is a Democratic majority, I think that's a little bit naive. And I think that we're not going to see a great deal. I think Bush ultimately is the one who's directing his foreign policy. He had to get rid of Rumsfeld to look like he was doing something. But whether or not substantively anything happens, it remains to be seen. And given the stubbornness of this president and his administration, I personally just don't see something immediately happening that's going to radically change the direction of this war. And I don't think the CBC is going to have that much sway. Even Nancy Pelosi said herself, this is about what the president's going to do, not what the Congress is going to do.
I think there will be a change, because you have to understand that this person is also tied to the first President Bush. And there was a clear divide among Republicans about this war. Many of the people who advised the elder President Bush advised against invading Iraq. I think this choice is a strategic choice. It's a purposeful choice. And I think you are going to see a change, because the president understands those numbers. I mean, they got thumped, as he said. And I don't think anyone is sitting in the White House right now thinking that they can just, quote unquote, stay the course.
Understand that the
world changed.
We're going to have to leave it there. Walter Field, CEO and publisher of the NorthStarNetwork.com, Joe Davidson of the Washington Post, Yvonne Bino, author of Stand and Deliver. Thank you all so much.
Thank you.
And as always, if you'd like to comment, you can call us at 202-408-3330 or send an email by logging on to npr.org and clicking on Contact Us.